Picture this. You're a Canadian business owner. You've successfully conquered your local market. Things are humming along beautifully, and now you're eyeing this massive opportunity across the Atlantic.
Right, Germany.
Yeah, Germany. I mean, it's the biggest economy in Europe. And you might think that shipping your commercial goods over there is just, a matter of slapping a shipping label on a cardboard box, paying a courier, and just waiting for that delivery notification.
Which is how we all usually think of shipping, right? Just a simple point A to point B transaction.
Exactly. But the reality is that there is this hidden, incredibly high-stakes ecosystem operating right behind that shipping label.
Yeah, it's a complex network that honestly most people never see. When you transition into moving commercial goods internationally, all that simplicity just vanishes. You are basically stepping into a highly strategic financial operation.
Which is exactly why we've got our hands on this comprehensive commercial guide today. It covers, well, pretty much everything about shipping from Canada to Germany.
And it really highlights the complexities.
It does. Details in here prove that mastering this logistics chain isn't just about moving boxes. It's about protecting your profit margins from all these hidden costs and, turning the total maze of German customs into a sharp competitive advantage.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with just the sheer speed of getting things across the ocean. Because according to the guide, when businesses move commercial cargo to Germany, they almost exclusively rely on the sky, not the sea.
Right, and the contrast in transit times completely forces that decision. I mean, when a company ships via ocean freight from Canada to Europe, they're looking at a timeline of 3 to 6 weeks.
Wow.
Sometimes far longer, depending on port congestion or labor strikes. But air freight, on the other hand, takes just 2 to 7 business days.
That is a huge difference.
Yeah. And if you opt for express air freight services, you're looking at delivery in a mere 2 to 4 business days.
It's basically the difference between taking a really slow, scenic cross-country train and, utilizing commercial teleportation.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, and the goods are flying out of major Canadian hubs. We're talking Toronto Pearson, Montreal Trudeau, Vancouver, Calgary. And they're touching down primarily in Frankfurt.
Right. Frankfurt acts as Germany's main cargo hub.
Yeah, alongside other major airports like Munich, Hamburg, and Berlin. And looking at the cargo manifests in this guide, we aren't talking about, a few pallets of basic t-shirts here.
No, not at all.
This is high-value, highly time-sensitive cargo. We are talking about automotive sensors to keep assembly lines running, aerospace equipment, pharmaceuticals, bulk e-commerce inventory. But
Exactly.
looking at the massive premium airlines actually charge, it really begs the question. I mean, is saving a few weeks of transit time actually worth the explosive increase in shipping costs?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, you'll see that fast shipping isn't just driven by impatience. It is actually a sophisticated financial and operational strategy.
How so?
It's built entirely around this concept of inventory turnover. So think about what happens when your goods are just sitting on a cargo ship in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean for 6 weeks.
Right.
That is capital. Your business is operating cash, literally just floating in the water. It
Oh, yeah.
is completely tied up and totally
Oh,
inaccessible.
I see. Which means you can't reinvest that money.
Right.
And obviously, you can't sell a product that hasn't even arrived at the warehouse yet.
Precisely. Furthermore, consider the realities of modern manufacturing today.
Okay.
Industries like automotive and aerospace, they operate on these really strict just-in-time production schedules.
Right, so they don't have massive stockpiles of parts.
Exactly. They deliberately do not keep massive warehouses full of spare parts anymore, just to save on overhead. So if a factory in Stuttgart needs a specialized electronic module from an aerospace supplier in Montreal,
Yeah.
and it is delayed by 2 weeks at some seaport, the entire production line could literally shut down.
Oh, wow, that would be catastrophic.
It is. The financial penalty of that manufacturing downtime completely dwarfs the premium paid for putting that part on an airplane in the first place.
That makes total sense.
And add in the fact that air freight involves significantly fewer touch points, less rough cargo handling.
Right, so less chance of things getting broken.
Exactly, which drastically reduces the risk of damage. So that higher upfront cost really transforms into a necessary investment in supply chain stability.
So you aren't really paying for a plane ticket for your cargo. You're paying for cash flow velocity and risk mitigation.
That's exactly it.
So, okay, you make the call to use the sky. But that brings us to the actual math of flying. How exactly does an airline decide what to charge a business?
Well,
because reading through the source material, it's clearly not just a matter of putting a pallet on a giant scale and, like, multiplying by a flat per kilogram rate.
No, definitely not. The pricing structure for air freight is dynamic, and it's super multi-layered. Base transportation costs fluctuate based on external variables.
Like what?
Things like fuel surcharges, mandatory security fees, terminal handling charges at the actual airport.
Okay.
And those shift continuously based on global market conditions and just available airline capacity. But the most crucial mechanism for any shipper to understand is a metric called chargeable weight.
Okay, this is where the concept of shipping air becomes dangerous, right?
Very dangerous.
Because if I understand the guide correctly, airlines charge based on whichever number is greater. So either the actual weight of your shipment on a physical scale or the dimensional weight, which is this volume-based calculation.
You've got it.
Wait, so if I ship a massive lightweight box of bubble wrap, the airline will charge me as if it weighs a ton.
Yeah, you are literally paying for the empty space inside that box.
That is wild.
To understand the mechanism behind this, you really have to look at the physics of an airplane's cargo hold.
Okay.
A commercial aircraft has two strict engineering limitations. The first is maximum takeoff weight, which is just how much physical mass the engines can safely lift off the runway.
Makes sense.
The second is the cubic capacity. Basically, how much physical space actually exists inside the fuselage. And space is just as limited and just as valuable as lift capacity.
Right, because if an airline fills its entire cargo hold with my giant boxes of lightweight bubble wrap,
yeah,
they run out of floor space to sell to other customers long before they ever hit their maximum weight limit.
Exactly. They'd fly a mostly empty, very light plane and just lose a fortune.
Wow. Okay.
So airlines protect themselves from that scenario using a specific mathematical formula to calculate dimensional weight. They measure the outer dimensions of your shipment, the length, width, and height to find the total cubic volume.
Okay.
And then they divide that volume by a standard dimensional factor set by the freight industry. If that calculated dimensional weight is higher than your actual physical weight, well, that becomes your new chargeable weight.
Which means optimizing packaging is no longer just a nice, you know, environmental initiative. It's a critical financial strategy.
Oh, absolutely critical.
Because if I'm shipping large, hollow, plastic automotive bumpers,
yeah,
the actual weight is minimal. But the dimensional weight calculated by that formula is going to be massive.
It's going to be huge. Honestly, optimizing packaging is the single most effective way a business can instantly reduce their freight bills.
Really? Just the packaging?
Yeah. Removing unused space, or what they call void fill, in your cartons. Avoiding oversized packaging. And creating incredibly compact, really tight pallet configurations. That directly reduces your dimensional volume.
Wow.
Even minor adjustments in how a product is nested inside a box can shift your shipment into a significantly lower cost bracket. It is literally a game of millimeters that translates into thousands of dollars in savings over a fiscal year.
Okay, so let's say you've spent weeks optimizing your packaging design. You've shaved off those millimeters, you saved thousands on dimensional weight, and you've paid the airline's freight invoice.
You're feeling good.
You might feel like a logistics master. But the guide says those savings can be instantly wiped out the second the plane lands in Frankfurt if you don't understand the German tax code.
That is very true.
And that brings us to the Einfuhrumsatzsteuer, the German import value-added tax.
Yes. The Einfuhrumsatzsteuer is a term you must become intimately familiar with if you intend to operate in this market.
It's a mouthful.
It is. For most commercial goods entering Germany, this import VAT is set at 19%.
Okay.
And the underlying purpose of this tax is just to ensure that imported goods face the same tax burden as products manufactured and sold locally within Germany, you know, creating a level playing field for domestic businesses.
That seems fair.
But the trap that blindsides international sellers isn't the 19% rate itself. It's the mechanism of how that percentage is actually applied. Logistics professionals refer to this as the landed cost trap.
Okay, so what does this all mean for the bottom line? Let me try to run the math here.
Go for it.
If I am exporting, say, $10,000 worth of specialized machine parts to a client in Germany, logic says the 19% VAT is calculated on the value of the goods, right?
That's what most people think.
So I should expect a $1,900 tax bill from German customs. Are you saying they calculate it differently?
They calculate it entirely differently. German customs assesses the VAT based on the total customs value, not just the commercial value of the parts.
Wait, what does that include?
That equation is the value of the goods, plus the cost of the air freight, plus the cost of your cargo insurance, plus any applicable customs duties.
Wait. They tax the shipping costs.
They do.
So if my goods are $10,000 and it cost me $2,000 for the air freight and insurance combined, the German government calculates 19% on $12,000.
Correct. So instead of the $1,900 you forecasted, your tax bill is actually $2,280.
Wow.
Yeah, that is an extra $380 completely vanishing from your profit margin simply because the landed cost formula wasn't properly modeled in your initial pricing strategy.
That completely changes the math of doing international business.
It really does.
Now, on the topic of duties, which is that final variable in the landed cost equation, the guide outlines a massive advantage for Canadian exporters.
Yes, CETA.
Right. There is this free trade agreement called CETA, the Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement, which can actually eliminate tariffs on almost all goods of Canadian origin entering the European Union.
CETA is an incredibly powerful tool, but leveraging it requires strict compliance. The phrase Canadian origin is the critical hurdle here.
Okay.
You have to prove the origin of the goods using specific documentation. Usually that's a formal statement on your commercial invoice or a dedicated certificate of origin.
And Canadian origin is tricky, right? Like,
yeah.
I can't just import a bunch of cheap electronic components from overseas, screw them together in a warehouse in Mississauga, slap a maple leaf sticker on the box, and just call it a Canadian product to avoid European duty.
No, absolutely not. Customs authorities anticipate that exact loophole. They enforce what are known as rules of origin. To qualify for CETA benefits, you really have to prove the product underwent a substantial transformation within Canada.
What does that mean exactly?
Usually this means demonstrating that a certain percentage of the product's final value was created locally, or that the manufacturing process in Canada was significant enough to actually change the product's official tariff classification.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, if you just do minor assembly or repackaging of foreign parts, you will be denied the preferential duty rate.
Which means you are back to paying full duties.
Exactly.
Which then inflates your total customs value, which then drives up your 19% VAT bill.
It's a cascading financial penalty.
Unbelievable. And knowing exactly who pays that penalty brings us to Incoterms.
Right.
These are the internationally recognized, standardized, three-letter trade terms that dictate exactly who is responsible for the risk, the freight costs, and crucially, the customs duties and taxes.
They're vital to understand.
The guide highlights two primary Incoterms for this route. There's DDP, which stands for Delivered Duty Paid, and DAP, Delivered at Place.
And the distinction between DDP and DAP basically dictates the entire customer experience for the German buyer.
Oh, so?
Well, under DAP, the seller is only responsible for getting the goods to the destination airport or facility. The moment it arrives, the buyer becomes legally responsible for clearing customs, paying any applicable duties, and covering that 19% Einformzatsteuer.
Wow. I always think of DAP like inviting a new client out to a really fancy, expensive restaurant to celebrate a deal.
Okay.
But right before the waiter brings the food to the table, you force the client to pull out their wallet and pay the tax and the tip out of their own pocket before they are allowed to eat.
That is a brilliant analogy.
It creates immediate friction, right? Mm. It completely ruins the experience.
It really does. And this raises an important question regarding your long-term sales strategy. Mm. If you are an e-commerce brand selling direct to consumer in Germany, or even a specialized supplier trying to onboard a new B2B manufacturing client, hitting them with a surprise 19% tax bill and customs brokerage fees at their loading dock is disastrous for client retention.
Oh, they will absolutely remember that logistical headache.
Definitely. That is why utilizing DDP delivered duty paid is so vital for market penetration. Under DDP, the Canadian seller acts as the importer of record. You arrange a freight, you pay the duties, and you absorb the Einformzatsteuer in advance.
So seamless for the buyer.
Exactly. The shipment simply arrives at the customer's facility seamlessly, fully cleared, and ready for use.
But if you commit to DDP to protect that customer relationship, your upfront financial forecasting has to be absolutely flawless.
Flawless.
Because if you quote a German client a flat inclusive price based on DDP, but you miscalculate the dimensional weight or fail to factor the freight costs into the VAT equation,
you end up eating those extra costs.
Yeah, you could effectively be paying your customer to take your product.
The margins in international trade are unforgiving. Financial modeling must account for every millimeter of space and every cent of the landed cost equation.
Okay, so let's say your financial modeling is flawless. Your taxes are perfectly forecasted and paid. Your boxes are packed incredibly tight to beat the dimensional weight factor.
Nice.
And you've secured your CETA origin documentation. But there is still one massive operational hurdle standing between your cargo and your customer.
The paperwork.
Yes. If a single piece of paper is missing or filled out vaguely, your incredibly fast, highly optimized air freight becomes an expensive permanent resident of a Frankfurt airport warehouse. We have to navigate the paperwork wall of German customs.
And German customs, formerly known as the Zoll, manages that clearance process, or Zollabfertigung.
Right.
They are the absolute uncompromising authority on what crosses the border into the European Union.
So speed doesn't matter if the paperwork is wrong.
Exactly. The speed of a cargo plane means absolutely nothing if your documentation isn't immaculate, because incomplete or vague paperwork is universally the number one cause of border delays.
Well, the source guide lists a very specific gauntlet of required documents. First, you need a Handelsrechnung, the commercial invoice.
Yes.
And this cannot just be, you know, a generic receipt printed off of basic accounting software. It requires exhaustive detail.
Very exhaustive.
Exact exporter and importer information, detailed product descriptions, country of origin declarations for CETA, itemized quantities, unit values, and the agreed upon Inker terms explicitly stated.
That's a lot.
Then you need the Fracht Brief, the airway bill, which serves as the legal transport contract with the airline, and the proof of shipment. You need a highly detailed packing list matching the physical freight perfectly. And you must have exact HS codes for every single item.
Right, the harmonized system. HS codes act as the universal language for global customs authorities.
What do they look like?
It is a standardized 6-to-10-digit numerical code that tells the Zoll exactly what the product is made of and what its intended use is. This code dictates the specific duty rate applied to the item.
So if I'm shipping parts and I just type the generic phrase car parts on my commercial invoice, instead of finding the exact 10-digit HS code for, I don't know, machined aluminum engine valves, the custom system flags it instantly.
Oh, instantly. The automated system will reject the entry because it cannot calculate the tariff without the exact code.
What happens then?
A customs officer will then manually pull the shipment for a physical inspection to determine what the goods actually are, and that halts your delivery timeline entirely while racking up storage fees at the airport terminal.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Even with perfect HS codes and pristine commercial invoices, the guide mandates a registration number I had never even heard of.
Ah, the EORI.
Yeah, it says the German importer absolutely must have an EORI number. What is the mechanism behind this? Why does Germany need a specialized identification number just to process a shipment?
Well, because the EORI number, the Economic Operator's Registration and Identification Number, is the master key to the entire European Union's digital customs tracking network.
So it's not just Germany.
No, it is not just a German requirement. It spans the whole EU. Customs authorities use this unique identifier to track import declarations, process duty payments, and legally assess the import VAT.
So how does a business actually get one? Like if I'm a Canadian seller shipping under those DAP terms we discussed, where the buyer handles the import, does my German client just automatically have one?
Generally, yes. Any established German business that regularly imports will already have an EORI number registered with their government portal.
Okay.
But you must verify this before the cargo leaves Canada. If they don't have one or if it has lapsed, your commercial shipment will hit a brick wall at the border.
And what if I'm using DDP?
Now, if you are the Canadian seller utilizing DDP terms, meaning you are taking on the legal role of the importer of record to provide that seamless customer experience, you must secure an EORI number yourself.
But I'm in Canada.
Right. Since you are a non-EU entity, you typically have to hire an authorized European customs representative or a specialized freight forwarder to apply for the number on your behalf and legally represent you to the Zoll.
That is a critical, actionable takeaway. You cannot fake an EORI number and you cannot bypass the system.
Definitely not.
And while the Zoll is heavily focused on digital tracking and tax collection, they're also enforcing incredibly strict physical regulations. Obviously, there are universally prohibited items, you know, counterfeits, illegal narcotics, hazardous waste.
Of course.
But the guide highlights restricted goods that require specialized permits from various German ministries before they can even fly. We talk about pharmaceuticals, medical devices, agricultural products, and items with massive aviation safety implications, like lithium batteries.
Yeah, and the regulatory environment extends far beyond the actual product being sold.
How so?
There is a really fascinating layer of environmental compliance integrated into German logistics. Germany aggressively enforces a law known as the Verpackungsgesetz.
Right, the German Packaging Act.
Exactly.
This part of the guide was wild to read. It implies that European environmental compliance laws reach all the way back across the Atlantic Ocean, basically legally dictating how a Canadian exporter is allowed to pack their boxes in a warehouse in Toronto.
I mean, that is the practical reality of the law. Yeah. The Verpackungsgesetz is designed to shift the financial burden of recycling commercial packaging waste onto the companies introducing that material into the German market.
Okay.
Importers who distribute packaged goods in Germany must register with a national database, participate in a dual recycling system, and report the exact tonnage and material types of the packaging they use.
So while the legal and financial burden primarily falls on the importer of record, located in Germany, the Canadian exporter has to supply goods packaged in a way that allows their German partner to remain compliant and avoid massive fines.
Precisely the dynamic. If you, as the Canadian supplier, choose to ship your goods using non-compliant, non-recyclable styrofoam, void fill, or excessive mixed plastics that run afoul of the Verpackungsgesetz,
yeah.
Your German importer is the one who faces the regulatory headaches and the financial penalties.
Wow.
It is a perfect illustration of how deeply interconnected international supply chains have become. The specific type of bubble wrap you select in a fulfillment center in Calgary directly impacts legal environmental compliance in Berlin.
It really proves that shipping commercially from Canada to Germany cannot be treated as a fragmented step-by-step process. Every single decision cascades into the next.
It's all connected.
Your packaging choices dictate your dimensional weight, which dictates your freight costs. Your freight costs inflate your landed customs value, which drives up your 19% tax bill. And your Incoterms decide who absorbs that final financial hit.
Beautifully summarized. And when a business truly understands the mechanics of this ecosystem, the speed, the volumetric math, the tax modeling, the uncompromising digital documentation of the EORI system, they stop viewing air freight to Germany as a basic transportation method.
It becomes something else entirely.
It transforms into a strategic business asset. Germany is the undisputed economic engine of Europe. Once you establish the logistical frameworks and customs compliance necessary to get your goods cleanly through Frankfurt, that infrastructure scales perfectly. It becomes the gateway for a broader, highly profitable European Union expansion strategy.
Let's do a quick recap of the operational journey we've mapped out today. We started by exploring the strategic necessity of air freight, trading weeks on the ocean for days in the sky to keep capital fluid and assembly lines running.
Right.
We broke down the mechanics of the dimensional weight formula, learning why shaving millimeters off a cardboard box prevents you from paying an airline to ship empty space.
Crucial step.
We ran the math on the 19% Einfuhrumsatzsteuer and uncovered how the landed cost trap calculates taxes on your shipping costs. We examined why committing to DDP Incoterms protects your customer relationships from surprise tax bills, provided your forecasting is absolute.
Essential for retention.
And finally, we scaled the paperwork wall of the Zoll, detailing why precise HS codes, C-to-origin rules, and the vital EORI number are non-negotiable for entering the market.
It requires a massive amount of precise coordination to move physical objects across the world, which actually leaves me with a final thought for you to consider.
I'd love to hear it.
We've spent this entire deep dive analyzing the immense complexities of moving physical pallets of parts across an ocean, you know, optimizing physical cargo space, navigating international tax equations, and adhering to strict physical packaging laws.
Right.
But consider the rapid maturation of localized manufacturing technologies, particularly industrial 3D printing, which is gaining massive traction within Germany's industrial sectors right now.
Oh, interesting.
If the logistics of moving physical objects remain this financially demanding and strictly regulated, how long until this entire global supply chain model is disrupted? In the near future, will a Canadian engineering firm stop shipping physical pallets of automotive parts entirely, and instead simply air freight the encrypted digital data to an industrial printer located down the street from the customer in Munich?
That is a fascinating vision of where global trade is heading. Shipping data instead of cardboard and plastic. But, you know, until the day comes when we can just email a transmission valve, you still got to get your physical goods through the customs terminal in Frankfurt.
You certainly do.
And as the Source Guide has proven today, making that happen efficiently, profitably, and without regulatory delays means understanding the high-stakes machinery working relentlessly behind the scenes. Because if there is one overarching lesson to take away from this deep dive, international commercial shipping is never, ever just slapping a label on a box.